Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusa. Before The Simpsons, Seinfeld, and South Park, before Stewart, Colbert, and The Onion, before collegehumor.com, and even before Saturday Night Live, there was The National Lampoon. Topical, postmodern, absurdist comedy and satire. Irreverent, yet sophisticated. Blue, but smart. In the view of the magazine's founders, National Lampoon was the big break from the benign, borscht belt comedic sensibilities of their parents' generation. Spun off from the Harvard Lampoon in 1970, National Lampoon quickly expanded into a comedic media empire with classic films like Animal House.
Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now.
And as great as that movie was, what followed for National Lampoon was a long, slow, and ultimately tragic decline. That arc is tracked in a new book called Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, The Writers and Artists Who Made the National Lampoon Insanely Great. It's both a chronicle and a compendium of Lampoon's best work, assembled by longtime contributor Rick Meyerowitz, who's here with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston, Rick.
Thank you very much, Adam.
To people of my age, National Lampoon...
What is your age?
I'm not disclosing. But it is such, my age is such that I think of Caddyshack, I think of Animal House, I think of Vacation, I think of films, not of a magazine, not of a periodical.
Right. Lampoon. You're talking about late Lampoon.
Indeed. So yeah. I wonder if you could define for us what was early Lampoon.
Lampoon began in 1970. It actually had its genesis across the river in Cambridge with three Harvard graduates who came to New York in 1969 to begin a national humor magazine. The notion that they had was they would not be your brother's old mad magazine. This was going to be a break with all humor that had come before it. This was going to be maybe a little reckless. This was going to be maybe a little insulting. This was going to be dangerous. This was going to be at times incredibly disgusting, and mix that up with linguistic and intellectual fireworks, and you have the early days of the Lampoon.
I wonder if you might read a prescient little piece from an early installment of National Lampoon.
This piece was August 1971. It was in the News of the Month, which Henry Beard wrote. The U.S. Coast Guard has reported sighting a 26-mile-long water slick several miles off Santa Barbara. The transparent and slightly salty fluid, which one observer described as greenish-blue with occasional flecks of white, apparently welled up from a subterranean spring on the seafloor, possibly as the result of a minor earthquake. Coast Guard officials feel that unless there is a sudden change of wind, the giant slick poses no danger to the delicate rust-prone machinery commonly found along the coast, and at present they do not plan to break it up with detergents or other chemicals.
Well, that's the Gulf Coast, if ever it was.
There's Obama's Katrina.
It's funny, this copy reads very similarly to the way The Onion reads.
Right. This is the precursor of The Onion. The other night in New York, there was an event at the New York Public Library. I gathered 10 former editors of the National Lampoon and a few special guests. And one was Joe Randazzo, who's the editor-in-chief of The Onion. And Joe gave a three-minute talk. And in the talk, he said The Onion is the news from the National Lampoon.
At the same time, though, a lot of the National Lampoon's humor was a little more graphically oriented.
Very graphically oriented.
And I think something that comes to mind is a very famous cover of National Lampoon, which featured a dog wearing a classically canine forlorn face with a revolver pointed to its head. And it says, if you don't...
A big silver revolver. And on the cover it said, if you don't buy this magazine, we'll kill this dog. Now, I want to say that that's pretty funny if you think it's funny. If you're a member of PETA, you may not think this is funny. And there were some people that canceled their subscription.
Yeah.
But this dog belonged to that photographer. And it was a very loved dog, and it was just all for fun. And they did not kill the dog.
Well, let's hope so.
One thing I can read you is a piece that an editor named Tony Hendra wrote on the editor-in-chief, Doug Kenny. Oh, I should describe this as a descriptive piece, and he wrote it particularly for this book. Doug Kenny had Joe College good looks and shoulder-blade-length blonde hair. He would have been the natural leader of the National Lampoon's group of writers and artists, except that this group, including him, was the kind of group that wanted all natural leaders dead. And he was a terrible editor, given to remarks like, "This sucks, but I don't know why." In the first moments after I met Kenny, and I should say that Tony Hendra was English, and still is English. In the first moments after I met Kenny, he informed me that all British humor was totally unfunny. Moments later, he was improvising flawlessly in the manner of Thackeray. And I mean Thackeray, not Trollope or Mrs. Gaskell or Dickens. And moments after that, he was demonstrating that he could put his entire fist into his own mouth.
And under that text, we see a photograph of that very demonstration.
I had a picture of Doug with his fist in his mouth. It was one of the things he always liked to do. Why? I don't know. A man with an IQ of 185 thought it was really funny to stick his fist in his mouth.
Well, so these were Harvard guys, and you were a BU guy, right?
I was a BU guy at the same time they were Harvard guys.
So you were a bit on the outside looking in. I wonder, what was it about the tweedy culture of Harvard at that time that was conducive to this brand of humor?
Well, I think one of the things you could say is that it wasn't about funny so much. P.J. O'Rourke said about Doug Kenny that he couldn't take anything that Doug said that was funny and repeat it, because everything Doug said was so perfectly in context that to take it out of context would be to ruin it. And what he also said is Doug was not primarily funny. Doug was primarily smart. And that went for all of them. They were just smart. And they weren't class-based. Doug came from a very different class than Henry Beard, the other founder, and a different religion. And yet what they had was a desire to take on the establishment. And that includes any establishment. That includes the anti-establishment. They were so anti-establishment that the anti-establishment thought they were anti-establishment.
Well, Doug Kenny and Henry Beard were primarily writers. You were primarily an illustrator for the magazine. And you, in fact, drew one of the most famous magazine covers of all time for National Lampoon. Tell us about how that came to be.
We were talking about, I had opened some beers and we were sitting around and Doug said to me, they're doing an issue and he's writing a story in Ersatz Italian about the undiscovered notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci. And art was going to be created that made it look just like, so, you know, Codex da Vinci something or other. Mm-hmm. Only there were going to be all kinds of made-up things like la aqua pistola, water pistol, or una cuscione pupu. And so all these things that were going to be drawn in this perfect Renaissance style. So he was telling me about it, and he said, we'd like a cover along those lines. And I said, how about the Mona Lisa as a gorilla?
And at the moment, right off the top of your head?
Just right off the, just like that. Off the, you know, bloop, bloop, it popped right out of my mouth. I don't know. It probably didn't even go through my head. It's possible, because if I thought about it, I might not have spoken those words.
Right.
And as soon as I said it, I thought, no, that's too sophomoric. And I turned to them, and they were weeping. Tears were rolling down their face. And I could not talk them out of it, and I tried. And this is true. I went ahead and I did the piece, and I may be known for some sophomoric humor that I did after that, but the Mona Gorilla has been recently called, a writer for the Wall Street Journal called it the best magazine illustration of the 1970s, and she's been called an enduring icon of American humor. So how can I argue with any of that?
Indeed. I'm looking at her right now. What I love is how coy, her she retains the coy smile, and she's quite hairy, with the exception of her bust, which retains its kind of milky, soft, ladylike skin.
Yes, and by the way, a little bit more zoftic than the original Mona Lisa. And I want to point out that
it's the bananas that do that.
That's right. The original Mona Lisa does not have a banana, and I think even Michael Pollan will agree that this Mona is probably a little healthier than the other.
Indeed, indeed. We're talking to Rick Meyerowitz. He's the author of Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, the writers and artists who made the National Lampoon, insanely great. And, of course, Rick was one of those artists. I want to talk a little bit about that title, particularly the first two words, drunk and stoned. All these gentlemen with whom you worked putting this together for all those years were drunk and stoned for much of the time.
No.
No?
No. Well, let's put it this way. Everybody was 21, 22 years old, 23 years old. It was 1970. It was possible to drink a lot. It was possible to get stoned. But they all did their work. They couldn't have put out a magazine every month if they weren't writing and writing and writing and working hard many hours a day. And we were all like that. And so if you had a beer afterwards or you went out to a bar or if you smoked something you shouldn't have smoked, then that was age appropriate. The important thing was they wrote like hell and they were smart as hell. And they put out an amazing magazine that really had an effect on the culture, because for the first 5 years, Adam, there was no place else you could get anything like what the Lampoon was. And then in 1975, with the arrival of Saturday Night Live, which was cast with many actors from the National Lampoon Radio Hour and the National Lampoon stage shows called Lemming and the National Lampoon Show.
So Belushi, who else?
Belushi, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Gilda Radner.
Wow.
And Michael O'Donoghue, who became the first head writer of Saturday Night Live and took a couple of editors with him. What you saw was, you could get Lampoon humor, the irreverence of the Lampoon, someplace else now. By the time Animal House came out in 1978, and Animal House, I believe, was the Lampoon's last real contribution to the culture, Lampoon humor was available in a whole bunch of other places. The magazine began a slow descent.
Let's get to the last part of your title, Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead.
I was neither of those. I was not... I was never drunk. I was not too stoned. I certainly am not brilliant.
And I can verify that at this moment,
yes,
you are not dead.
So far, I am not dead. So far, so good. Some are.
Some are.
Some are. What happened?
Yeah.
What happens? You know, here's a heart attack. Here's a accident.
You're referring to Doug Kenny there.
I referred to Doug Kenny as an accident. Doug was... had a vacation with some friends on an island in Hawaii. I think it's Kauai. And he decided to stay on for a couple of days, maybe do a little writing, hiking. And his friends went back to Los Angeles, and he went for a hike, and he took off his shoes, and he was walking along. It had rained. And he slipped off a muddy cliff and fell. And Doug was so indecisive that his friends said about him that as Doug was falling, he probably looked up and saw a better place to have fallen from.
I think it was Harold Ramis said that.
Harold Ramis and maybe a few others. There was no real feeling that among those closest to him that Doug would kill himself, or in the terms of terminology that they off himself. It wasn't really him. He was sad, but not suicidal.
Last question. The Harvard Lampoon continues.
It continues, and it owns the rights to the name Lampoon. And because it owns National Lampoon's name, it has stopped the group of felons that at this time owns the name National Lampoon from publishing a magazine. They have not been able to publish a magazine since the mid-90s.
But they're still producing other types of media.
They're producing really trashy stuff. You can find a National Lampoon website, and it's really got awful stuff. It's toilet humor. They have nothing to do with the National Lampoon except they have the name. And what this was, what the this time in history, 1970 to 1980, was really, those were the great years, the Lampoon.
Rick Meyerowitz, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's a great pleasure. I hope I've been able to clear things up.
Rick Meyerowitz is the author of Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, The Writers and Artists Who Made National Lampoon Insanely Great.